Hello everyone and welcome to JFG Tonight. I've been off the internet for 2 days. I had a cold. I started suffering from hypothermia at first and then fever. At first I was 2 degrees below the normal. And so I was wrapping myself in big covers. Eventually it built into more like a fever. I was hotter than usual. In any case, my voice was very weak, so now I'm doing good enough to try to make a show. I have a cough drop in my mouth, so don't worry if I sound a little different. I will try to perform tonight to the extent of my abilities. Mulder says, welcome back, JF. Philosoraptor says, damn him and the woman that gave birth to him. He's talking about the guy who's disliking the stream. There's some people disliking the stream. You have to live with it if you're a streamer. All right, I've received super chats while I was gone. Fellow comrade was on Entropy and he said, glad to see you're still kicking it. It looks like I have a bit of catching up to do on the backlog. Sup, JF. Long time no see. I didn't even know you were on Odyssey. Lol. Glad to see you're still kicking it. It looks like I have a bit of catching up to do on the backlog. Well, amazing. Fellow comrade, you know, I remember your icon. You were giving super chats back in the Bloodsports days. And here he is, he just learned that I've been on Odyssey for a full year, hasn't seen any of the show. Well, welcome back. It's hard to rebuild a community on a different website, but we've done it, and it's been a year. Very soon, I think it will be officially a year. And I think that most people that we had to keep with us have been kept with us. We have gathered back the people we needed. There will be place for growth. But yeah, if people are not motivated enough to go watch my last YouTube video and see that I did say that I was moving to Odyssey, what can we do? End of the line, Joel says, Elon Musk is too capricious. He cannot be trusted to be consistent. Absolutely. There's stunning news about his response on why he doesn't get Alex Jones back on the platform. Absolutely emotional reasons. We can do it because I have such a long video review tonight that we might not have time to cover much news. So since you talk about it, let's talk about it now. Elon Musk's reasons to block Alex Jones' return to Twitter have nothing to do with the reason he was banned. So, Elon Musk answers some biblical statement or whatever to Sam Harris on welcoming back Alex Jones, and Kim.com makes a case that Alex Jones should come back. Elon Musk explains why Alex Jones won't come back. My firstborn child died in my arms. I felt his last heartbeat. I have no mercy for anyone who would use the deaths of children for gain, politics, or fame. This is not a rule of Twitter, Elon. And so at this point, it looks like the quest for Elon to buy Twitter is to arbitrarily apply his emotions and powers as he feels to get what he found funny on the platform back on the platform. But it has no significant effect on a concept of free speech, because if you make Elon cry because Elon lost a baby, well, then you cannot go back on the platform. That is not a reason. You know why that's not a reason, Elon? Because there's no Twitter rule against being a murderer. And so a murderer can have a Twitter account. A rapist can have a Twitter account. A 7-Eleven thief can have a Twitter account. Now, a baby killer can have a Twitter account. But Alex Jones cannot have a Twitter account because Elon Musk lost a baby, and then Alex Jones had an opinion on some public subject, which was this shooting and the circumstances surrounding it. Having an opinion on this public subject connects too much to the personal story of Elon, so that Elon goes harder on Alex Jones than he goes against an actual child rapist. Because there is no Twitter rules against being an actual child rapist. Okay? I wish I was on Twitter so I can explain this to Elon Musk. Are you going to start being a kind of parallel law enforcement of the government on those laws that they can't enforce? Because it kind of looks like this here. It looks like you're going after people with your news censorship of Twitter. You're going after people based on what the government doesn't quite succeed at doing. And the government has... Oh, shit. Oh, no. My microphone. Would it be possible to get some... Give me 30 seconds. My microphone is falling. All right, quite a thing to redo. I think this is one piece I should change. I bought this. This it's called a quick lock. It's just the thing that holds the microphone, and I've bought this on an emergency coming back from the US, restarting my show, and it fitted in the room that I was in back then, which was the house of my mom. Because when I came back from the US, you know, I didn't know where to land. So I was a couple of months at my mom's house, and this fitted, but it was cheap, and I got it from whatever music store I could find back in the distant Quebec. Yeah, I think this is due for change, and we have the capacity to change it now. I can buy something better. Anyways, going back to Elon Musk, if you don't, Twitter cannot be this kind of completion of the law where you're like, okay, the government is punishing you hard enough to be a rapist, so I won't punish you for being a rapist, but I'll punish you for speech. I'll punish you for having an investigatory opinion on a journalistic matter like the Sandy Hook stuff. You are falling back into the exact same censorship that's been dominating big tech. And anyways, you won't appease the leftists. The leftists are coordinating against Elon, so it's not like he's saving himself any trouble by doing this. He is just messing up on all fronts. He's fucking it up for the leftists, fucking it up for the right-wingers. As he said, was his plan to piss off 10% on each side. It's a ridiculous plan. You're going to piss off everyone. You're going to piss off 100% of people. Because no reasonable free speech advocate would tell you that Alex Jones banning is okay. He's an inconsequential thinker. He has literally no consequence to what he thinks. And he could be right on certain things. And it's funny when he's right, because then we can have memes that say, oh, Alex Jones was right, and it's fun. Philosoraptor says, JF, being isolated from society How do you still get sick? Well, I have this theory of viruses that we are approaching viruses in a very poor manner in our world. We're approaching it like, oh, the virus gave you this sickness. Therefore, our strategy should be so that you don't get exposed to that virus. Therefore, you wouldn't get that sickness. And it's technically true. In the same way, you could say, if there were no guns at all in America, there wouldn't be mass shootings. Yeah, if you were in a sterile bubble, completely isolated from the world, you couldn't possibly get a viral disease other than the ones that you were already carrying on your clothes or whatever. But I think that reality needs to be approached in with a different model. Not to say that this is bullshit, but it's just to say that this is looking at it through one lens. Looking at it through another lens is to say there are viruses and bacteria everywhere. And your body, most of the time, is fighting them off successfully. Eventually, there are conditions, which can include half a dozen things, nutrition, health of your immune system, the particular nutrition you've had that particular week, your general levels of energy, whether you were investing energy on other things, and whether you enter in contact with that virus. The contact with the virus is just one element out of many, many others, which will lead to be such that that particular week you were due to get a virus, and that particular virus happened to be there, and it led to a sickness that you were due to get. And since there are viruses everywhere, of course you're going to get it. So the way I see it is, even if I'm isolated from civilization, there are viruses everywhere around us. And they're always, first, I'm not totally isolated to the point of being in a bubble. I'm not in a bubble. There are other human beings. I have neighbors, etc. But most importantly, I think that eventually the viruses get to you because your body is due to, it has these, it is in a state where it is likely to get attacked by anything. So I think we should look at it from these two lenses rather than just the first lens, because the first lens is the lens of the Marxist interventionist expert. Oh, we have to teach people how to wash their hands. We have to teach people how to wear masks. And all of this assumes that you're saving people from the virus. But that's worth nothing if once they remove the mask, once they get their hand dirty, there's a million virus on their counter. See, the whole idea of transforming our world into a sterile world from a bacterial and viral perspective, I find is ridiculous. We should just build solid people who can pass through a disease. And to me, it's good news when I have a cough, because a lot of people die from the cold or from cough viruses or the flu. So every time I have a flu or a cough or a cold and I survive it, it means I'm still good. I pass the test of life. That's good news. I don't want to stop it. Fiddlesoraptor says, thanks for the great answer. Reminds me of the guys that showed after 40 years and showered after 40 years and died. Yes. Fiddlesoraptor says showered. Oh, yes. Thank you for the correction. There was another super chat before I get to my review of a very interesting video about the political agenda of teachers. We're going to get to it, but Carlota has sent a super chat on entropy. Thank you so much. He says, JF, in your Wiki Hit Piece article, you appear with the gray shirt that white will preserve for your descendants. Yes, the gray shirt is still there. Had they found a pic of the shirt falling apart, they would have put it in the article. Oh yeah, I mean this picture is still a picture that I've taken manually. I've taken that picture because I was disappointed that my Wikipedia page didn't have a picture of me. So I took a picture right here in front of my studio and I said on Twitter, this picture is released under a Creative Commons license so that I can be illustrated on Wikipedia. I mean, Wikipedia was having a pleasure of not illustrating me because they are so against me. They so want to smear me on this article that they were happy not to give me fair coverage, even in the visual domain. But I forced them to, hey, there's a picture you can use. And they did. I'm drinking Gatorade Zero, perfect for cough recovery, because I'm not hungry. I don't want to drink anything that would be sweet. I mean, anyways, I never drink anything that has sugar in it. But Gatorade Zero is an equilibrated drink. It is so much more equilibrated than any of the crap that the yoga people would have you drink. Perfect equilibrium of sodium, potassium. In principle, I could be having a flow of Gatorade Zero through me, and I probably wouldn't die. That's a sign that you are at equilibrium with nature. When you say, oh, I could have 4 liters of this, maybe 10 liters of this, and I don't think I would die. I mean, at some point, physically, there would be difficulty accessing air and oxygen and breathing, but it's very hard. It's probably the hardest liquid that you can kill someone with is Gatorade Zero, which makes it the healthiest thing. Dino Rogovich says, Jeff, did you see the video of the Canadian College of Medicine or surgeons advising doctors to treat unjabbed people as mentally ill? No, I didn't. I'm very busy tonight because we have a 40-minute video to review, but Dino Rogovich, if you want to send me a link and perhaps I can review it for tomorrow, or I can also show it if it's a short thing tonight. So let's get started on this request from a fan. He says, Jeff, how would you argue against that kind of argument? Parental right to determine what their children hear in school. So that it's a weird debate. It's weird that we are there, because if you knew about the world 80 years ago, this debate wouldn't make sense, because my grandparents, they were farmers. They had something between, depending on the family, 7 to 13 children. Some dying, some, but lots of babies per family. And they were choosing whether they were sending their children to school. Some of their children is like, oh, let's keep him for handling the cows. This one we're gonna keep her for seeding the garden. And this one, not very strong, not much muscles. Let's send him to school. Let's send him to school for third grade for a year and then we'll see. And that was the school option in the generation from my grandparent to my parent generation. Some of them would be sent to, well, it was school. It was basically a Catholic systems operating a full year service where you take your child, you abandon the child to the Catholic Church for a full year. Now, terrible idea from a whole sex abuse perspective, but I don't think it ended up hurting anyone in my family. So thank God not all priests are rapists. So yeah, they were choosing, yeah, let's do a full year of education and then, oh, let's bring back to home and on the farm. That was the optional relationship with structured education that existed forever. And in fact, before 400 years ago, there wasn't even a structure, a mainstream structured education possibility. Maybe if you were at some te specific temple in Greece, maybe there was something. But for most of the surface area of the planet, there hasn't been a structured option for school before 400 years ago. And going forward, it became obligatory only a few decades ago. So this conception that school is obligatory is seeping into this conversation very easily, and it never gets told. Like these people, even the very intelligent conservatives, and they're really great, the conservatives, these four people have excellent argument in this conversation. But even them don't go as far as to say, hey, let's first discuss here. The government is forcing us to send our children to these people. And these people are liberal, far leftist, who are pushing their far leftism onto children and who don't even know it. So this is a state of extortion, and it exists throughout Western civilization. The simple fact that I cannot tell the government, hey, I don't want these people, or if I do so, then the government is going to come back at me and say, well, prove that you do good homeschooling. Because that's the standard in many places in Canada. Prove that you do good homeschooling. Well, no one is asking for that degree of proof in professors, in unionized professors. And yet we are applying this standard to individual parents, when in fact what should be in question is whether structured education of the modern kind is obligatory for child development. It's not. Spoiler alert. Now they start the discussion on, do teachers have their own political agenda that they are pushing on children?
I think it's important to recognize that individuals will have political agendas. It's a natural thing, and people should understand their political views. I think where we need to differentiate it is whether a teacher should have a political agenda in a classroom.
But is your idea of a political agenda like these teachers telling students, this is who you should vote for? If you vote for these people, it's wrong.
Yes,
if you vote for
or
these
ridiculing
people, it's right.
The beliefs that they may have for political or religious reasons and using their position of authority.
This guy is trying to minimize the ways in which your political preferences show in your teaching. But the fact is that there's a hundred ways through which they show. They show when you start introducing the non-gender conforming stuff. They show when you start talking about diversity in a certain way, but not in another way. They show in every way you do your teaching. He's trying to reduce the debate down, but there's what you have to answer to him is no, not just this, so many other things.
Authority to mold the minds of everyone else.
When it comes to diversity or these new sort of terms, I am not for certain types of so-called diversity when it comes to these new kind of topics and
stuff. Can you expand upon that? Like, what do you think shouldn't
like critical
be included?
Race theory or some of the gender ideologies. It's not diverse if you're the teacher, the person of authority in the classroom, and you are saying this is how something should be.
Yes.
Here the simple way to lay it out in any debate, including if you're talking to a liberal teacher, is I want to present a heteronormative space to my children so as to favor the modeling of adult heterosexual behavior and to present the advantages and the greatness of heterosexual reproductive lifestyles. and any sort of diverging from this is a breach upon my moral signaling toward my children. So if you are forcing me to get my child in a diversity class in which they learn that, hey, you can be something else than a boy, you can be something else than a girl, or you can choose to be homosexual, that is putting my child on a path of being exposed to a moral signaling that my ancestors weren't exposed to. And it puts him on a path to lifestyles that are associated with extreme amounts of suffering of all kind, including mental health suffering, depression, suicide. So by any standard, if the non-heterosexual lifestyle was a pill, there would be an experiment on this. Let's say Pfizer says, hey, I have this pill. If Pfizer had a pill that leads to the same amount of suicide, depression, and sufferings of all kind as non-heterosexual lifestyles, that pill would be regarded as a bad medication, as a dangerous one. You are applying that pill, that dangerous pill, in your classroom, without demonstration over intergenerational times that you are not creating the hurt, that you are not creating the problems that we correlate with these lifestyles. You don't have the data to argue that you are not cutting certain families from existing at all, because you're, by convincing someone to go for these non-reproductive lifestyles, you are chopping off lines of descent. You are making it impossible for the family with a single child to ever have grandchildren. You don't have the data to argue that any of this isn't a danger of your teaching methods. So yes, you have your agenda. By pushing for these lifestyles, you are diverging away from the agenda of most of our ancestors and what they've exposed their children to, which led to our existence.
Yeah, so I come from an elementary perspective. I'm a first grade teacher. So the conversations we're having in class isn't about the socioeconomic nature of the world. But, you know, we do talk about just what it looks like for different people in different communities. So when I talk about a political...
See, by simply bringing this subject, you are practicing the empathy of my children to be guided by race. Because when you say, we want to explain how it is for certain people in certain places, we know what you're doing. You want to train the empathic capabilities of children to take the race label and say, oh, let's look at how they're suffering in that neighborhood. And then you are trying to move them toward a leftist solution, toward these neighborhood problems. Well, you are doing indoctrinement, because you're manipulating the emotional structure of children to get them on the path of a political option and opinion. Crazy Catman says, you can always trust JF to know the best when it comes to parenting and teaching, and most things, let's be honest. Well, thank you very much for the compliment.
Political agenda. The agenda that I have in the classroom is to create an environment where folks are able to, you know, better understand from wherever someone's coming from.
Just the conception that you have to understand where someone is coming from is already a leftist premise. It is a feelings-based, empathic display, and it is a political agenda. My grandfather didn't understand where people were coming from. My grandfather wouldn't be like sitting on a chair, and if you bring him a modern blue-haired leftist and she starts explaining that, you know, she has a vagina, but she feels like she has surpassed and transcended the vagina, and that she has inverted the vagina in her head and now considers herself to be a penis, and that it's very clear in her head and that she needs a surgeon to take action to transform her imagined penis into a reality, my grandfather wouldn't understand where she comes from. And that wasn't a bug. It was a feature. It was a feature of our cultural and religious systems, that there were certain things we were closed to hear. And it led to a very functional society. You don't know the kind of things you're training children to do and to care about and to understand, as you call it. You don't know that it leads to a stable society because your mentality isn't even 20 years old. So it doesn't even have a generation of human time. My grandfather came from a different society in which there were things to be understood, but you wouldn't care about the feelings of each and everyone. And there were things you would ignore about what people say.
The problem with that, and I understand the sentiment as a teacher, if you...
They use the word understand so much. It's such a social display. It feels like crap.
If a child is sitting there and they happen to be black and you're saying, well, black people, such and such and such. I mean, you're really, that's not okay.
I do have to stop you there because that's...
It's an okay point to do. To say, well, you know, when you appeal to young children to care about this neighborhood and saying, maybe he's black, maybe he's poor, maybe he's different from you. Well, you are framing all these factors, black, poor, as one thing, and you're creating in the mind of a child a kind of non-diverse view where every time they will hear the word black or every time they will hear the word poor, they will associate it with a certain way of being that isn't reflective of the whole diversity. It's a okay point to make, but the reason you don't make it in a debate is that the leftists will come back and say, I'm not saying all. There are black people who are privileged. And it's like, it leads to nowhere.
It's not really said. It's not said black people do this.
Well,
it's not said Mexicans do this. Again, it's trying to understand from multiple perspectives. That's not saying that every group aligns on the same thought. That's not saying every group is a monolith. What it's saying,
the whole idea of a perspective. If you are teaching perspectives, you're already straying away from what the teacher should be teaching, which is reality and truth. It's okay, some perspective as a pedagogical tool. But I feel that the leftist teachers of today, that's all they're doing. They are within a space of perspectives.
Saying is, even if you disagree with somebody or you come from a different tradition or a different cultural background, those people's opinions can still be valid.
And the disagree step forward.
And this whole leftist conception of an opinion being valid, what does valid mean? Valid means something in a discussion where we're asking about the truth. So is this theory valid? Well, it's valid if it's true. Opinions being valid, what does that mean? Being valid in the sense that they can have it, that they can have it legally, that they can have it legitimately, that they can have it and that you should respect them for it, or that they can have it but that you don't respect them for it. Naberius says, valid means aligns with my moral framework. Exactly. Would this guy say that it's valid to be like this girl will say? She says she wants a heteronormative home. I really love this girl when she will intervene. Would that be a valid opinion? And would it be as valid as yours?
I'm gonna be honest,
now
as a teacher...
the liberal teacher army. You can see who they are.
Especially after COVID and all of that, I don't have time for a political agenda. I'm here trying...
Yeah, bullshit. Let's get to... this woman, this is the first thing she says. You know it's bullshit. Let's get into the detail here. Tell me how you don't have time for political agenda. Tell me what is it that keeps you busy?
Trying to catch up with curriculum, pick up my readers that are, you know, 2-3 grade levels behind. I do not have time for that. I teach social emotional.
Okay. Too busy for the political stuff. Now let's see.
Emotional skills and all of that. But I'm not here to kind of, you need to believe this, 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 and that. No. If you're a good person, we're good. We're gravy. All good.
And this girl will catch her right away. Oh, that's an interesting ending. If you're a good person, we're good. We're good. No problem. No problem. Well, what's a good person?
You know what I mean?
But your definition, and sometimes this can happen and it becomes political, is what is your definition of a good person? Mm. Would you think that I'm a good person because I'm raising my kids to be with Judeo-Christian values and they live in a heterosexual, heteronormative home where we talk about how divorce is wrong, cheating is wrong. We have friends of the LGBT community, but we teach our children that from a biblical perspective, that's not okay. Your definition of whether or not they are good could be very different than my definition of whether or not they are good.
To kind of clarify, am I classroom, if they're kind and they're not bashing anybody, judging anybody, kind of throwing out names.
Well, judging anybody. So if a child says, look, my mom told me and my priest told me that LGBT behavior is against the Bible, that would be judging someone else. So that would be bad. So you are not leaving the political agenda out of the window because a child would be bringing here a religious view that is inspired by religion that they legitimately have, that is valid, and you would say that this is judging and therefore the rules of your classrooms have been broken.
Anything like that, they're good. It's not to say that topics like that don't come up in class. And I do open it up to discussion. I just keep it clear that this is a safe space. We don't judge each other. We're not going to bash each other. I understand you.
Bashing. This is a leftist word, bashing, because there's no such thing as bashing. Like, you want to see bashing? Join me on Gab. I mean, sometimes before I sleep, I look at my phone on Gab. Now, I see all of the 4chan videos and MPEGs and there is bashing going on in some places, but I can tell you that there's no bashing that's ever happened in this woman's class. And yet the leftist always has this impression of being bashed, of, oh my God, I can't. This person has expressed a religious preference against LGBT. I must stop them from bashing onto my LGBT student. There's no bashing. People are free to have the judgment they want and the opinions they want.
You have your own experiences, but we're not going to come in with an agenda, you can say. And I feel like this idea.
Lady, you just laid out your freaking agenda. And in the same sentence, she's like, and so we don't have an agenda. What you just described is an agenda.
Idea of parents and their teachers of their political biases and all of this is just all of this fear that is clouding their judgment, clouding.
Except we have we have numerous, not just.
We have experiences.
My own child, first week of school, what pronouns you wanted to go by? I mean, not what's your favorite subject? How can I help you succeed academically?
Who's to say that wasn't a part of the questions too, you know? And understand that question could stand out.
So maybe you don't understand.
So that question, the problem with it is that, and this is something I touch upon in my second book, The Moral Signal. There are questions that send more messages than the information they try to gather. There are questions that are designed solely for sending a message. And so you have rhetorical questions. That's already a category, but it's very rare that we also include in that category questions like, what is your pronoun? But what are your pronouns is a rhetorical question in the highest sense of the word. It is ultimately a question that doesn't care so much about the information being gathered. It, whether the person, of course, it matters to the extent that the teacher will use it, but there the things that are around this question matter so much more. Orders of magnitude above the informational transfer that is operating here. First, there is the causal route between the teacher and the student. Oh, what? You've never thought about it? You have to think about it. You have to know what to answer to this question. So you're suggesting that there is a mental process you've not yet gone through, but you should go through it. You're suggesting this to 9, 10, 11-year-old children. What is this mental process? The mental process of deciding whether you're a girl or a boy, or whether you're something else. Wow, that is what's hidden in that question. It is an appeal to, have you ever considered that you wouldn't be a boy or a girl? And now that you've not, now that you've realized you've not considered it before, consider it now. And now let me talk to you about the other options, because you don't just have he and she. Have you ever considered perhaps that you are one of the 50 other genders? Oh, what? You've never heard about it? Well, let's cover what they are. Let's explain what they are. This is just the beginning of the unpeeling of the onion. Then there's the morality display. This question is also meant by leftists to display to others. That's why they display it in their Twitter bio. It's a display to say, I care. I care about this. I care about gender advancement because it's a leftist political agenda and I want to push it forward. And then there's the whole political fight that the question implies, which is it's a movement meant to direct children toward non-reproductive lifestyle. In terms of a rhetorical question, I think the question, what are your pronouns, is one of the most massive peak rhetorical question. It contains orders of magnitude more content in the things wrapped around it rather than the particular information of the pronoun. Naberius says it's a rhetorical question that subscribes the answerer a set of hidden assumptions. That sets to a set of hidden assumptions. Absolutely. Before we continue, let me remind you that if you would like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey Super Chats are my favorite platform to receive support for the show. Alternatively, you can use Entropy. The link to Entropy is in the description below. I will replace my cough drop. And here we go. I'm good for another 40 minutes.
Understand that you're teaching politics.
But that's not politics. That's just like basic respect.
So, yeah. I think that's beautiful.
But not to me.
That's beautiful.
Not to me.
So I think you need your idea that that's basic respect. What is the framework of that? Because I think that many teachers...
Now, this guy, extremely clever, conservative guy. Weird that he has these Rasta, whatever, entities, dreads, is that how they're called? Anyways, the guy has somehow dreads, but he's a conservative. He's extremely intelligent, but he's in a way too intelligent for this conversation because he's going to fail at, you know, recruiting the leftist here. But he's explaining what you guys call basic respect as leftist liberal underlings to it. Like the way the way you would rather defend the freedom of the young potentially gay individual rather than defend the freedom of religion of the person who's convinced that the gay lifestyle is against God. The way you tip the balance and you choose one side instead of this one, that is your definition of basic respect is liberal.
Teachers are going through these trainings, mm-hmm. and the trainings are saying this is the framework of how we operate in the classroom. Mm-hmm. But where did that idea come from?
Because it's based off, it's called a thing called data.
Did you?
The look of superiority in his eyes. Ah, oh, man. When they do this, drives me insane. I know data, bro. I know how it's collected. Your data is collected by liberals with liberal priors, liberal preferences, liberal selectivity about what gets published, liberal desire to improve the world. Let's see what this data says. But I'm pretty sure, yeah, and there's the whole problem of what data will you be ignoring? Because whenever these leftists come with, I have data, what, you have data on what basic respect is? You have data on whether this liberty should be balanced like this or like this with respect to this other liberty? What kind of scientist are you?
So a lot of, no, hold on. A lot of schools have research and development. And so the state also does. So in the state of California, we do research.
Here, we do research. Holy shit, these people don't know how to look intelligent. Okay, I have to breathe. Let me drop some data here. The rate of suicide for someone who identifies as trans is somewhere, I don't remember the exact number, but somewhere around 40% at least. 40% of attempted suicide at least in the trans community. Are you going to integrate this data to your classroom? Here's how I would integrate. I would be extremely careful at inviting people who haven't expressed a desire to live that lifestyle. I would be extremely careful at directing them toward a lifestyle that has 40% associated suicide attempts. Does that make sense from a data perspective? I have data. What's your data now?
So at the end of the day, my job is not just to make your kid to feel comfortable. I got 55 students. I got to make 55 students feel comfortable. And so,
okay, so we don't have data anymore. We're not at data yet. So he has to make students feel comfortable. Okay. Well, if there was one child among 10,000 in the whole school who is trans, perhaps we could give a special session. Perhaps we could ask him or her what are his or her pronoun in a separate room. Perhaps there could be a special educator handling that case. But the idea that you extend the special services that are needed in 1 out of 10,000, 1 out of 100,000, that you would extend it and deliver it to each children, I don't see the support from data here. I haven't heard any data that the children are gaining from it.
So when your kid comes home and tells you, well, mom, the teacher said, what's my pronouns? Yeah, I did say, what's your pronoun? I also said, what's your favorite TV show? What's your favorite food? I am a college professor.
So his argument at the end is, well, we did ask the pronoun question. You know, the rhetorical question that has massive political implications. But we are misrepresented because we asked a lot of other questions. These other questions matter much less because they don't carry the weight of doubt that you are seeding in children's mind with that question. Silver Spider sends a super chat. People are asking, he has 55 kids in a class. Is this normal in the US? Let's see. Before I read the super chat, he explains what his job is here. Is it high school, maybe?
Professor now. I was previously a third, fourth grade teacher.
He is a professor now. But he was previously a third and fourth grade teacher. So maybe when he says 55, he's talking about the university. He's a professor now. Holy shit, this guy is a university professor. And he was saying, we have data here in California. We do research. That is the university level. Do you understand why I left the university? this is the standard. Silver Spider sends a super chat. He says, hey, JF, someone I had a conversation with responded to that point by saying white men make up 70% of suicide. How would you respond? Well, first, 70% of suicide, white men? I would believe it for men. That white men have such a high... No, okay, so here's the trap. This guy worked with biased data to begin with because he didn't balance by race. If you want to claim something about white men, you have to do in percentage of their population representation, which is why my mind was bugged when I read what you said, because it really wrecked my mind. I was like, it's not possible that white men are so much more committing suicide than black men. You have to divide by the representation of the population. So first, let's get the white out of the question. Black people are 13% of the population. Well, they will represent a very small portion of the total number of suicides, but it's dishonest to be looking at it in raw number. You have to divide by 13%. Now that leaves the white aside. Let's consider your question without the white. Hey, JF, someone I had a conversation with responded to that point by saying that men make up a lot of the percentages of suicides. How would you respond? Well, I don't see... The thing is, you cannot convince people away from being men. I know that the leftists want to think this, but you certainly... Let's say even within the leftist mindset that you can switch from men to women, even in that mindset, you cannot take a male and convince him away from that suicide rate. So if we knew of an intervention, perhaps we could use it, but we don't. But we certainly know that we are directing people toward lifestyles that 100 years ago they would not have converged to. We certainly know that there is, for example, a massive peak in the request for gender reassignment surgery through social contagion in young girls because we've been spamming so much of the LGBT propaganda. So we know that you cannot causally stop a man from being a man, or even if you were to get them to transition, they would have an even higher suicide rate than just basic men. But we do know in the other case that we have a causal route to stop doing it, to stop promoting a lifestyle that is non-reproductive and that is associated with higher problems of all kinds. Go Away says, JF, perhaps the push for trans identity is designed to equalize the suicide statistics between the genders and the classic leftist drive to equalize outcomes. I don't know if it's the main motivation. I don't think so. I think the main motivation is much more pernicious. It much more has to do with a fight against the family and against tradition. But I think you are bringing an important point as to what it will result in. Eventually in the future, male and female data will be extremely blurry. But it's because the leftists would have categorized the trans woman as a woman. So they're going to be like, oh, see, now people are all the same size and now people are all the same strength. And it's like, no, you switch the labels.
Third and fourth grade was horrible, dealing with parents who thought their child was special and should be treated a certain way. It just wasn't doable. The constant complaining, the accusing people of doing things that are not going on in our classes, not being enough for their child.
Whoa. This guy is saying that he was approached basically by entitled white parents who wanted their child to be specially treated. Something tells me that the parents who approach him were just demanding a lot of effort to make a very intelligent child, like any parent would want to do and any teacher would want to do. But he's interpreting this as they were asking for special treatment. Let's re-listen to what this guy says.
You, well, mom, the teacher said, what's my pronouns? Yeah, I did say, what's your pronoun? I also said, what's your favorite TV show? What's your favorite food? I am a college professor now. I was previously a third, fourth grade teacher. Teaching.
Okay, he's a college professor now. Now, listen to what he says.
Third and fourth grade was horrible, dealing with.
Teaching third and fourth grade was horrible. Does it make sense that we have these people teaching in college to people who would eventually want to become teacher? Visibly, this guy didn't have much success. If he was a plumber, it was the plumber that was always leaking, you know, the plumber who can't fix a pump, the plumber who can't fix a tank. And we take this guy and we say, go teach in college. You're going to teach to people how to become teacher. It's like taking the plumber that was leaking all the time and say, okay, you're going to become the teacher of the plumbers.
With parents who thought their child was special and should be treated a certain way. It just wasn't doable.
The parents thought their child was special.
It was horrible, dealing with parents who thought their child was special and should be treated a certain way. It just wasn't doable. The constant complaining, the accusing people of doing things that are not going on in our class.
He had parents who wanted their child to get the best they could, which every parent should be expected to want. Every parent wants their child to be the next scientist, astronaut. They will delude themselves into this. It's a beautiful thing. It's not something to combat. But this guy was like, I didn't like it. They were asking for special privilege. He wanted advanced maths when the rest of the poor community issued minority generated class was not even able to get at this level of math. They wanted this level of math. This is the lowering of the standard by the average impersonated in a single man. There you go. This is why public school always averages toward the bottom. It's because they end up convincing themselves that the parent who wants to push a little bit more than the other parent so that his child is, give him something that will challenge him for real. He ends up believing this is privilege and it must be combated. And it's a problem rather than something to be admired. There you go. This guy is the impersonation of the average lowering effect of public schools. This is why we're going down. This is why the children in 50 years from now will be incredibly more stupid than the ones 20 years ago.
Classes not being enough for their child, it was just too much. When parents don't have the knowledge of what goes on inside of a school, I think it's important for those parents to go to the school. And we as educators like our parents to be involved. You know, again, I have too many students to push an agenda. I do my job, what they pay me.
You've shown enough agenda that we don't believe you. This may be one of the leftist self-adaptation. They may be so self-deceptive that it helps their furthering of the pushing of their agenda. The fact that they don't believe they have an agenda is a perfect adaptation in today's world so that they can push it.
What do you mean to do?
Discussion about sexuality doesn't belong in schools.
I had a sex ed class when I was in third grade, and it was quite simple. Boys go in this room, girls go in this room, they play a little video on a black and white TV. You know, you see the genitalia, and you're like, oh God, I got one of those, cool, now we're figuring out what I am. The fear is these schools have no boundaries. Like, if they do the classroom thing where they want to split kids up, how many genders are we going to do this? Are we going to put boys, them, and then girls, and then how many rooms do we need to create for equality? Are we really chasing equity? And I think parents now are beginning to realize we've got to stop this and create framework about sexuality, especially in a hyper-sexualized culture. My kids don't need to know at 6, 7, and 8 years old about different types of sexual acts. That's not appropriate.
People think that this is just kind of happening, it's a one-off. It is in so many schools. Where I live in Florida, there was a poster going around where kids could text anonymous strangers to get information about sex. And on this poster, in school, wanna get laid?
Wow.
I mean, this is, it's beyond, and there is a push for pleasure.
Well, yeah, I mean, this girl is interesting because she's in Florida, but she had to pull her kids out of school. So she went for homeschooling. And it's impressive that this kind of stuff is happening even in Florida. You would think that it's different because it's a Republican state, but the fact is the school system, even in some Republican state, doesn't get straightened out politically. And it still converges toward this leftism, no matter what. Go away says, can you like the video in the chat, JF? Like the video in the chat. You mean link? I can link it. Here it is. Here's the video.
Based sex. Mm-hmm. Pleasure for who?
My oldest is 9 years old. She's in third grade.
I love the way I unpaused it. It looks like she was saying based sex. That's a concept. Maybe we could develop this concept. Based sex. Well, that would be heterosexual sex.
Right, and she's been exposed to things, and we do have conversations about it, but that's a conversation that I should be having.
AKA sex.
Having with my 9-year-old daughter. If a 6th grader or a 4th grader is going to be prompted by a teacher, hey, what are your pronouns? As a parent, I should have a heads up about that because they're not even going to understand the question. And so I think that...
All right, all these people make sense. So, but we still haven't heard the liberals. The liberal elite is in the back, silent as usual. We'll see when they come.
The idea that those conversations are started in the classroom instead of in the home is a big problem. I have a family member who, first day of 6th grade, was asked for her pronouns, and she stood up and said that as a person of faith, she believed that God didn't make a mistake making her a girl, and so therefore she identified as a she, her, and she was sent to the principal's office and punished for that decision.
There you go. So that would be a statement that under the guidelines of respect that the liberal teacher lady mentioned earlier is a breach of her rules. And yet, it is a statement of belief that is entirely fair. I believe that God hasn't made an error, and therefore, I identify as a man. He, him. That's not even judgment. It doesn't even crush judgment, yet she gets punished for it in the director's office.
Thankfully, we haven't seen that broadly yet, but I think it's really damaging to take a shy, innocent 11-year-old child and make them stand in front of a classroom and determine something that they maybe haven't even put that much thought into.
I like what you said, Sean, about how you were emphasizing, you know, how a lot of parents today felt a good...
This guy makes me think of all the freaking leftist clones of bread tubing, like Hassan Piker style, always speaking with a soft voice and facilitating his entry, but in the end saying crap. The way he speaks is annoying.
Goodness of the way that sexual education was conducted in the past. So there is an agreement that sexuality should be talked about in schools. The disagreement is whether it should just be purely heteronormative or if we should include all aspects of sexuality.
The question is, if you have a rare medical disorder that affects one person out of a million, would you apply a medical cure maybe a medication to any more than this one person out of a million who suffers from it. It wouldn't make sense to give that pill to the million of children, right? The same thing goes with issues around gender identity and trans identity. If someone shows these needs to be addressed, send them to a special educator for the school. The school can have this specialized staff, but you won't apply LGBT training and pronoun asking to a million children when only one or 10 would actually need that kind of care. You are applying a care, a psychological care, to someone who doesn't need it without knowing the consequences of your psychological strategy. So, of course, the leftists here are trying to frame this as, well, do we want education to be only about heterosexuals, or do we want it to be open to more? That's not the question. The question is it worth propagandizing people who do not seem to suffer from gender dysphoria with memes that are only useful as part of addressing an existing gender dysphoria? And is it possible that by trying to apply your medicine to too many children, you are causing more gender dysphoria with it? Is it possible that you're directing people into a pipeline of gender questioning that they wouldn't have gone in otherwise?
I don't think that we're doing demonstrations to encourage children how to have sex, but this is something that we are trying to, again, educate and make them aware that this kind of things happen. And while you grow up, you're going to have to experience somebody who's of this orientation.
Kids are naturally curious, and I think
And the whole idea of, oh, well, it's just to get people to prepare. It's just to get people prepared that they will encounter people of this gender identity. If it was just this, you would prepare them to encounter so many other things, but you talk of it in a moralized way. When you ask people pronouns, you are not just suggesting there will be people around you with different pronouns. You are suggesting you should change something about yourself, or you should think about it at least.
What I'm hearing from you is I understand where you're maybe potentially coming from, but then where's the line between that sex education and introducing them to porn? Because porn can be educational. I was a virgin when I got married, and for years I was made fun of and heard, well, how are you gonna know if you don't try it? We hear that a lot too. If you haven't tried to kiss a girl to see if you like it or not, then how do you really know that you're not a lesbian? How do you really know that you're not gay if you've never slept with a guy? How do you really know that you want to be in a monogamous relationship if you don't sleep around? And when you start to introduce those questions to children, specifically prepubescent ones, they're going to naturally be curious, and their emotional and hormonal...
Exactly. Just talking about the possibility is opening paths of behavioral output that otherwise could have been totally closed. Someone just could... If you don't tell someone, it might never occur to them that, oh yeah, there's this very weird type of sex where, I don't know, there's an acrobat here, and then there's five people like this, and... You know, there's a level of complexity that the human brain will not explore until it's put in front of you. And some people might not even think that lesbian sex is possible if you weren't to put them in front of it, if you weren't to illustrate, or if you weren't to talk about it.
Maturity is not there to be making those types of decisions that have lifelong impact.
Well, you're right, and a lot of them are learning at home, because just like you guys are saying, they come home to tell you things. Well, guess what? Those same kids come to school and talk about what you're telling them at home. You'll be surprised what I hear from students when I do a what do you think. Well,
this guy is trying to make a moral tie between, oh, you guys are hearing bad stuff about what we teach in school. We are hearing bad stuff about what you guys are doing in your family. You know what the difference is, sir? Your judgment has no value because you have zero legitimacy, zero authority in deciding what is the direction that these children take in life, whereas the parent does. So I don't care if... In fact, it's dangerous, the fact that you're judging. because I totally expect this kind of liberal teacher to be judging the authoritarian religious parents. I can't believe they've been teaching you that God doesn't want you to be gay. That's horrible. Well, the parents have a legitimate interest in ensuring the reproductivity of their children. You don't. This guy is so creepy.
Well, let me tell you what my mama and daddy did. And look, I don't have time. Your kid is not that important to me. Not to be rude, I got like 300 students.
Oh my, this guy is scandalous. Your kid is not so important to me. So not only does he want to have the moral tie of being able to judge what parents do and whether it's appropriate, but on top of it, he's making this talk to the end style of gesture while saying, oh, you know what, in the end, I don't really care about your kid because I'm so busy. Just fire this guy from any sort of job around any sort of children. Just make him a bureaucrat of whatever. Send him work on asphalt roads that will not matter. Something where his actions cannot matter. Aquanote says, JF, wealth by definition is intergenerational. Encouraging gayness is a vector of achieving equity. You're saying, if there's so many unreproductive people in society eventually in a hypothetical future, then there would inevitably be equality because everyone, there wouldn't be much lines of generational wealth. Well, it's kind of, you are thinking of things so theoretically that you've reached a mathematical truth. But I think your mathematical truth doesn't work when you think really of implementing it into any sort of reality. Here's the problems you'll be faced with. Wealth is not so intergenerational as people believe. Okay? You can follow the wealth of, say, the King of England, and you're going to trace it back to today. But those are exceptions. The vast majority of big amounts of wealth, just, you know, millionaire or multimillionaire level of wealth, I don't see it survive easily much more than 6-7 generations. Very hard for this kind of wealth to survive. And on average, it won't survive. That's the first thing. The second thing is you can't have a society in which gay is both irritable and common, because that's anti-evolutionary. It's against the mathematics of evolution. It just won't happen. So you are living in a mathematical world, sir.
Your kid is no more important than the other 299. So I don't have time to sit up here and
Look at the equalization that's inherent to this guy.
Let me get you to think like me. I can't get my own 23-year-old to think like me at the end of the day.
He's justifying the poor delivery of service to your kids because I have 299 other kids. It's like this guy has all of the speeches prepared to explain how bad he is. Bro, you hate teaching. You suffer through a third and fourth grade. You don't have time for people's kid because you have to equalize your teaching. At this point, why don't you do something else? It seems like you're more an inconvenience for our children and that you are a net negative.
What needs to happen, and this is just my own personal take, parents need to start being parents, because a lot of times the teachers are the parents. They're parenting your kids because absentee parenting.
I think that this conversation is really interesting, and I think we need to step back and look at why we automatically assume that if we're telling our children about lesbians, gay people, queer people, why do we immediately equivocate that to telling them about what sex is? That can just be something as simple as, here is a book. In this book, there are two dads. This book character has two dads. And kids, they...
It's a problem because a person 100 years ago wouldn't have been exposed to that lifestyle possibility at all, through the cultural transmission system of school or school-like entities. So it's a problem that suddenly in 2020, it appears that there is a conspiratory force pushing librarians, public schools, public officials, all to force this into all children and the most often they can. That's a problem. It's a problem because it doesn't play the function that you claim to merely expose people to the possibility that it exists, but it exposes them to the possibility that it may be them and that they might want to choose to live that way. Jonathan Dow says, this book character has five dads. Yeah, just happens to have five dads. This one happens to have seven dads. This one happens to have nine dads.
They can be inquisitive, and that's good, right? But also, like, they're going to be like, cool, there's two dads.
All these kids know that there's a dad.
Yes, there's a problem that they will say cool without being properly informed that there are correlates, that by choosing this lifestyle, that they're not going to have a baby first. This whole idea that a baby has two dads is deceptive to begin with, because it hides that there must have been some mother. She's just not shown.
Dad, right. And a dad and a, right. Mom and a mom, and the, yeah, culture is teaching all of that. So what we've noticed is that the curriculum in eighth grade and up is a lot deeper than that. It's more like, here is how you can have sex so you do not get pregnant.
Yeah.
Illustration of anal sex. That is the stuff that we are now reacting against.
So anal sex is suggested at this point in our children's book as a contraceptive method. It's like, holy shit. At this point, why don't you get the baby? Like, if you're going to ruin your anus for sex, maybe it's time you just consider having a baby. It's not that hard, you know? You'll be able to care for it.
And that, sadly, is the trust that's being broken between teachers and parents.
Yeah, and I think we're moving into a conversation about comprehensive sex ed. What I am talking about is when I go into this classroom and I'm teaching kids, I'm not going to just teach kids material that is heteronormative.
Out of curiosity, it sounds like what you're saying is you want to be able to introduce all...
See, she has a political agenda. If you're not going to teach kids stuff that is only heteronormative, it means you have a preference about what they should be exposed to.
All ways of life. Like, these are the people that you will encounter with throughout life.
That is what I'm arguing, yes.
So would it be okay to include a book with a man having a relationship with a 12-year-old in that book? I know it's extreme.
No.
Hold on, but just hear me out.
Because now you're equivocating gay people to pedophiles.
No, I'm not.
Now, see, this guy is intelligent, but he's too intelligent for this crowd. And they have to reduce his argument in this apish way. So here's what he's trying to bring. He's trying to bring the fact, if you want to expose people to what exists, then you could bring, you could have a book about a pedophile parent. Like, okay, you have this book about a heterosexual parent. You have this book about a homosexual parent. Why not have a book about a pedophile parent? And the reason he's trying to bring this is you are not just documenting the world. You see something wrong with the pedophile example. You see that there would be something wrong to bring that to the children. It would be an awkward conversation. And of course, their answer would be, and it will be, well, pedophilia is criminal. But the reason he's bringing that point, and the reason it's interesting, is what if from the perspective of a parent, there is a crime against God in the LGBT lifestyle? What if for the perspective of one parent, God has equally ordered men not to have sex with children, but also not to have sex that is with your own male with male or female with female? But of course, the leftist teachers are unable to process this. And so you have this crazy woman that starts yelling, no, because you're equating pedophilia and homosexuality. It's like, lady, your brain doesn't have access to a cognitive experience of reality because you deprive it from a connection with reality. Come back to reality, appreciate what the man with the dreads is saying to you, because it's going to put your brain in a state of thinking and reflection. And I would hope that someone who has access to so many children and who will change so many children's life, I would hope that someone like this does some thinking of her own. It's a very interesting question to ask. What you find wrong about pedophilia? Have you ever considered that some other parent might find other sexual behavior wrong? Not that it's the same, not that it's equal, but that they think that there's something wrong with it in an equal fashion, in a similar fashion. Anyways, that's the part of the video that I wanted to review. They move on to discuss about guns in school. I don't think it's a super interesting debate. Should teachers have guns? I think there are arguments for, arguments against. However, just to say, it's a hilarious part because this guy, the black guy who's been complaining that he hates life and he hates being a teacher and that's why he's not a teacher anymore, this black guy ends up making the argument, "You don't want me to have a gun." And then the conservatives are like, "Why? Why?" "Why?" And he's like, "You don't want me to have a gun because I just went to the counselor." And this guy reveals that he's basically psychologically unstable and that it's a bad idea to give guns to teachers to protect against mass shooting because he's psychologically unstable. And he's just out of a therapy session. It's like, bro, that is not a good argument. It is not a good argument. You don't want to do this in a debate. So the question that the audience member was asking tonight was, "Jeff, how do you argue parental control over school content?" Rule one of this question, never start with the argument that you are psychologically unstable and that therefore you should have access to children and you know better than everyone. Unbelievable, this crew. I will do my final evaluation by saying this girl, extremely well-spoken, extremely intelligent, beautiful, great, great mother. This woman didn't speak much, but it was clever when she did. This guy, wonderful, very intelligent, too high IQ for the crowd, but that's what happens. You cannot have 8 intelligent people at the same table. So when a guy of that intelligence comes with his correct points, it doesn't quite connect because they're just too stupid. And the black lady, also just a conservative woman who cares for what our children is exposed, very well spoken and very good. Now the fat teachers, basically, this, and this, terrible arguments. I knew that it's bad what people send their child to, but the fact that this is what they could find that's best to represent themselves in a TV show is worrying. Because you have to think those may be the most intelligent and most stable emotionally teachers that they could possibly find. That means that if you go in a random school, it's lower than this on average. And finally, the Asan Piker of the teaching world. Soft words, you know, soft way of speaking, but no content that I found interesting, no argument that had any value. They all are denying that they have an agenda, but you can see from just the tenor of the discussion and how it turns that there is a heavy agenda. If you want to watch the full discussion, the link, I'm putting it in the chat, and you will also find it in the list of links in the description below. Also, you'll find when I finish the show, in the HTML link to the list of links that I've been using tonight, you'll also find 15 links that are news items that I had kept on the side in case I needed to talk about the news. But I think this video review was longer than I expected and more interesting, so I didn't cover the news. But a quick review of those news: crypto is crashing and then recovering a little bit. Bitcoin is shaken because there are other companies fading, like Genesis, who were doing crypto lending. I don't know this platform. But anyways, they keep publishing the news every day. Genesis is going bankrupt. It's the last day. They need $1 billion and they will go bankrupt. And apparently today was the really last day. So they will really go bankrupt, as they've announced every day since 3 days. I'm tired of this news, so I'm happy that they're going bankrupt. I mean, it's annoying. Anyways, this whole crypto lending crap, it never made sense in my head at all. It's like, okay, you're lending crypto. Crypto has massive volatility, and if you lend it, either you're really keeping it in your wallet, in which case you've lost, you've neutralized your crypto for a given amount of time, or you're getting out of your wallet, and then it's not a guarantee, and then we start talking about fractional reserve and the fact that you don't really have the assets to back your debt. In any case, it always sounded like bullshit to me, and those businesses that are crashing, I'm more or less happy. I don't think they deserve a place in the crypto space. It's all crap, the crypto lending stuff. What else is important? I've already covered the Elon Musk emotional instability around who's banned, who's not, Alex Jones. Twins, that's interesting. Twins born after embryos frozen 30 years ago. 30 years after their embryos were frozen, two twins were born on Halloween in what many experts are calling a new record. So at this point, they were explaining that the freezing is so cold that it doesn't even matter the time anymore. He was saying, you know, at a certain level of heat, like if you were to freeze at minus 30 degrees Celsius, maybe at minus 30, there is a difference in the molecular movement between 1 week, 5 weeks, 10 weeks. But at minus 200 degrees Fahrenheit, that's liquid nitrogen temperature, they say 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, there's not any difference. So it seems that we can, at this point, we have mastered the technology to indefinitely freeze an embryo. And if you have the energy to keep the liquid nitrogen at this temperature, you should be good for your embryo to work in 100,000 years. That's interesting. It's interesting. Now, that being said, I don't know what's the outcome with these embryos. Do they end up with more disease? Are there problems that they experience? I don't know, because freezing is quite, it's a harsh process, you know? I'm surprised, actually, that human embryos can survive that process. But I guess they must be dipping the embryo in some solution that protects it. Protecting it from mostly ice crystals and that kind of thing. Jonathan Dow says, Jeff, are they technically boomer twins? They may be the youngest boomers in the entire world. Okay, perhaps we can finish the show tonight with some images from New York City. Mask wearing, of course, for safety is always important. If you're on the subway, a mask will help you not spread COVID. But this particular guy is also smoking crack. So I'm not sure here that the mask is that important as part of the wider fact that he's smoking crack in people's face.
Ah, man!
Check him out, y'all. He having the time of his life. Nah, never. He got the COVID mask as the...
Hey, yo!
The eye cover for when you go to sleep. I'm out of here.
All right. Well, it seems that this crack is having impacts at the moment of the intake of the smoke. I don't know. I've never tried crack. Don't try it. Bye-bye. Hello, 1, 2. I realized that Dino Lugovic has sent the link, but he has sent the link that he mentioned on a he mentioned in a super chat. But the what was the super chat about? JF, did you see the video of the Canadian College of Medicine or surgeons advising doctors to treat unjabbed people as mentally ill? Okay. But the link that you sent me is the link to the Twitter account, but it doesn't lead to the exact tweet. So I'm having difficulty finding it. Anyway, Dino Lugovic, for an answer to your thing, maybe if you can send me through Discord DM, that would be best. Discord DM so that I can talk about it tomorrow. And Philosoraptor, I had missed a super chat. He says, Bitcoin explained. Imagine if keeping your car idling 24/7 produced solved Sudokus so you could trade that you could train for for heroin. Okay, that is the kind of explanation you want to throw the normie just to see their reaction, but not necessarily a good pedagogical approach, but a valid way to generate laughter. Thank you everyone, and see you all tomorrow.